Hey, it's David Cherry, and welcome to the show. This podcast helps you stay in tune with the new energy around community and brand building, sharing conversations with some of my friends and my favorite online founders and creators about how they built a brand and community around what they do. And as always, if you want to reach out, just look me up in the show notes, check out the guest links. Thanks for tuning in. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to another show. I'm here with Anna Gatt. Am I saying your name right? I know you're a linguist.
Perfectly well. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, very glad to have you on. I feel like it's been so fun to watch this thing, this inner intellect, just bloom online. And I feel like every time I go on Twitter, or each week I go on Twitter, it seems like it's just growing and growing. But I know it wasn't always like that. And I know it was probably something that maybe even years before what we see now with the salons you're running, you were probably working on some iteration of what it is that you do today. So where I'd love to start is maybe give me like just a small snapshot of what the inner intellect is today. What are the salons that you're running? And then we'll go back, you know, maybe to 2016 or 2017 and look at what were the, you know, the steps that probably felt like stumbles to get to where you are today. So what is like a snapshot of the inner intellect and your salons?
Yeah, thank you so much for this. Is a great way to structure it, I think. So Inner Intellect is a global community and talent platform for public intellectuals. That's how we like to summarize the many things that we do. Primarily, we create a global network of salons where every single home, every single Zoom room in the world can become a potential scene for a salon, where you can gather people around the topic about which you like to have a discussion and facilitate a conversation. And these are paid events, so you make an income through that and can, you know, build a living if you like. On the other end of that, we have this great driving ambition to basically rebuild the public arena from scratch, to create a completely different type of media, a completely different type of structure for discussion around the world, in which individuals are extremely empowered. That is very meritocratic. If you're, you know, smart and hardworking and people want to attend your salons, then you will be successful. There are no other credentials that we're looking at. And we see this thing growing and flourishing around the world at the moment. So I think we are onto something, and people need this post-political, post-academic kind of fireside getting together and talking about not very obvious things often. For example, an evening about Renaissance architecture, or a special time of game design, or a great unanswered question in mathematics.
It's so amazing. It's like, it's almost like all these people have interests, and they might feel like they have this deep interest of something, you know, alone in their homes. And when they look at the media, it's all about like politics, or it's all about like breaking news. And it's almost like there's this thirst or this like hunger for deeper discussions around topics that these people really care about, but they never had that outlet. And I think, you know, pre-internet, it was really difficult to find those other people who might respond to that and might want to engage, you know, with that topic. And what I kind of picture almost as you're describing that is, it's almost like the first time that you can go hang out with other people who aren't in your own area to discuss what you want, enabled through the internet. So like the salons, they almost feel like someone's house, like, hey, come over, you know, five people, hey, come over and let's all like discuss this topic that we're just interested in. And so it's just amazing how the global aspect of it just really frees you, because suddenly there's other people like you. And, you know, at some point, I know you've done some in-person salons. At some point, hopefully there'll be more actual physical, but it's really nice to just probably beam in and see other people and discuss topics with them. It's incredible.
Absolutely. I think it's very important for us that we started last year fully IRL. So I started the first kind of tentative events in around May 2019. And by October 2019, it was really accelerating. So we were doing events in London, in Menlo Park, in Atlanta, in Mountain View, in Brussels, in Berlin, in Mumbai, in Los Angeles. So we were really, really spreading. And then COVID kind of pushed us online and provided us weird opportunity to start doing a lot more events and develop our signature event format, which is the Inter Intellect Salon. It has a very special format. And I hope to kind of create a post-pandemic version of the Inter Intellect that is will be both online and offline, and we are experimenting with this new hybrid. When it comes to kind of finding that dolphin sound frequency that people who need to hear, and they gather and they self-select and they come and they attend salons and they start hosting salons themselves. I think what's very important is that we're building something that is fundamentally luxe. It's entertainment. It doesn't serve a goal. People don't come to Inter Intellect salons to get a job or improve their writing or find a date. Of course, sometimes those things happen because it's part of real life, but people come with an open end in what they want, right? And so it becomes something that is closer to entertainment, it's closer to enjoyment, it's closer to bonding. Actually, if you look at your own life, most of the things that make you really happy and make life worth living don't serve an explicit goal. They are infinite games, and you want to keep playing them and be allowed to play and be accepted into the play. So, you know, I think one of the great attractions of our salons is this really chill vibe. You come and it's intellectually very challenging, and you have to read things, and, you know, people are tried and tested in a good way and make improvements, but it's for fun. That's why the salons are in the evening, and I often talk about how a salon should be the last thing you do on that day. You're not rushing anywhere. You open, you know, a bottle of wine, you put your feet up, and you let your mind think freely and engage with other people. So in that sense, I tend to say that our competition is Netflix.
Amazing.
People are not binge watching Netflix while they are at my 4-hour long salons, but they are also not checking their phones or sending emails. You have undivided attention for 3 to 5 hours, and we do that multiple times a day.
Yeah, you know, I so resonate with that. The title for the show that I'm playing with is No Agenda, which is the concept of just that exactly what you're saying. All these indirect outcomes happen, but you can't pursue them directly. And I think where a lot of people get stuck with trying to build community is they try to force it into existence. They try to force certain outcomes. And like you're saying, that's not really how it works. It's kind of all the spontaneity that creates the magic. And, you know, something you mentioned kind of, I guess, caught my ear a little bit, which is you have a format, right? There is a structure. And because one thing I was going to ask about is you're replicating salons all over the world in different cities. You're not there probably for all of them. How do you keep the magic? And it sounds like maybe the constraint of the format is really important. So could you share a little bit about what that format is and how it's kind of constructed?
Sure. I think that's a really good point. Yeah, definitely when I'm thinking about open outcomes, that spirit is embedded into our format as well. I will give you an example how I see the kind of the marriage of the spirit and the structure here. So one of my, I have two kind of facilitator creeds how I like to facilitate events. And I learned this while hosting offline events, right? One is the imperfect host. So the host can be imperfect, and everything can be imperfect. Everything should and can go wrong, because if you have a host who is perfect and very pristine and gives you like an ex cathedra lecture, then you will not really feel like you're an equal participant. So this humanness is always there. And I always say, like, my favorite salons are the ones where I don't know, like, there's a title for the salon. I have no idea. That's why I would like to discuss. There are no loaded questions. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm not trying to convince you about anything. And this is a spirit that, you know, other hosts espouse as well. We actually reject topic proposals for salons where the host seems to have a very strong opinion about that topic. And I'm not talking about, of course, like, there are basic principles of human rights, et cetera, that are non-negotiable. But when it comes to, like, is Nietzsche the greatest philosopher in the world? Like, you don't want to go to a salon where you will be kind of like, you know, grilled about it. You want to go out to a discussion where the host is not 100% sure about this, right? I'm at least curious about the answer. So that's one thing. And the other thing is stickiness. And it was so fun. Like, we were doing this fireside chat with Nadia Iqbal last Saturday, it was 9th of August, about her new book, Working in Public. And she was talking about stickiness when it comes to open source and community management. And I didn't know about this before reading her book. I came up with this myself. Stickiness is something that you learn in London. When I lived in London, and maybe in Los Angeles, you learn the same thing, is that, you know, you move to London, it's a big city, and, you know, you start going to events. And what happens is that at first you invest your energy and time into opening up to people and then listening to them and remembering who they are and keeping their stories in yourself, right? But what you learn very quickly in London is that you will never see those people ever again.
Right, totally.
And after you've gone to like 50 events, you're not going to open up and you're not going to listen because you're not going to put into that energy about people that you will most likely never see ever again, right? And so I was like, okay, so if I want to have relationships in my own life and around myself that are where people invest, then it has to be guaranteed that you will see those people again. And so I remember constructing my first events, saying, always opening the events and saying, guys, this is the first of a series of events and the next one will be on the 10th of September. And, you know, I remember like all my RL, like, you know, you have to click here if you're okay with your email address being shared afterwards, and then you will also see other people's emails. So like always telling people before anybody said anything that you will see these people again. This is not your one chance. You don't have to stress. You don't have to convince anybody that you're the best person in the world and that if you fail, I don't know, you drop the mic, then they will never talk to you again. No. And this is the same with our salons. Like, we give everybody a chance to speak, but if you don't want to speak, you don't have to. You will get back the mic later. And it's fine. Nothing is like, you never have one shot. It's always an infinite game. So for me, that is like one of the really strong underlying principles here. And this is also, this also reflects in topic selection. So every single salon's topic comes from earlier salon's topics. So at every salon, we kind of like identify two or three topics that remain unanswered questions after like 3 or 4 hours. And then we say, okay, guys, we will get back to you when these become salons. And they always become salons. So you never leave a salon thinking like, oh, damn it, we didn't talk about this or that, and now the chance is gone. No, you know that in like 2 months, there will be a really good salon about this, or you can host it. And I think that kind of like, you know, it's almost like swimming in a river of this, right? Like, it's, there's this chill, there's this flow, there's this good sense of repetition. This is not going to pass you by. You don't have to rush for it. You don't have to like rush there and grab the most out of it now and keep it for yourself and then go. You can just really like be very fluid about it because Interintact is always going to be there for you. You can leave for 2 months and come back later. It will still be there and you will be remembered. There's documentation that you were there. You have been added to the follow-up channel about this salon. You know, we have photos, emails, chats, everything saved always from every salon. And it's like we're building this kind of city of minds, if you like, where people can feel safe, you know, as citizens.
Yeah. And it goes back to not pretending, because like you're saying about being at a party and forcing yourself to talk to somebody or forcing yourself to be interested in something, it's just, you don't have to force it. And I think when a group has that forward momentum where it feels like we are heading somewhere together, this group is progressing. There's, you know, new salons coming up. And I can be a part of this thing that's growing, but I'm not forced to be, and I don't have to, you know, get the most out of it right away. I think that's such a great thing to build to support the discussions that you're having. And it's just funny because I picture a networking event where you're literally just like, you know, trying to run up to people and can I get their name? Can I get their business card? It's just like so counter to that, which is amazing. And that's why everybody hates those networking events. Like nobody likes those. But yeah.
I never used to network at the networking events.
That's it's impossible. Yeah. And you know, when I go to conferences, I like to invite people to lunch. I like to be like, hey, do you want to like skip out and go get lunch? Because that's where like all the great conversation happens. Like, you know, but yeah, I think that's a great principle, which is one, sort of making sure that there's always a seed for the next kind of blooming, you know, thereafter where, hey, we're not gonna we're not going to close it. It's not done. It's to be continued. I think that's really important. And then one thing I notice is you want it to feel like there's a group progress, like we're all sort of growing something together. Maybe we can transition a little bit to talking about having other people host, because I think that's a really generous and sort of also rare feature where people tend to try to control maybe the microphone, or they try to maybe only have a certain tier of people who can, you know, be speakers. Maybe let's talk about you going from having these in-person events and then opening up online to other people running them without you as involved. Like, what did you sort of learn to do that? Or maybe what comes to mind as I bring that up?
Yeah. So I would like to just add one more thing about the kind of open-endedness. And I remember I was watching the TV series Transparent a couple of years ago, and there's this amazing phrase in it that I still remember. It takes place in LA, like, right? Your city. Mm-hmm. Where they say, oh, it was a NATO encounter in that it's not attached to outcome.
Nice. That's awesome.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
I really believe in like soft governance. I really believe in this combination of, I mean, I'm a very disciplined founder, very, very energetic. Every day we make progress. You know, it's very, I'm a solo founder, but I'm, you know, doing, I think, an okay job at like really pushing forward every day what this organization needs, and to, you know, look after everybody's needs and be also encouraging and be there, be supportive. But on the other end, I'm really, really soft about things. Like, I really give a lot of trust and credit to everybody in the community, all the hosts, all the attendees. Our code of conduct is very breezy. I'm super happy to have constructive debate. You know, there's this, you know, if somebody needs to take time to think about something, like, there's no pressure. And the amount of people that are starting like newsletters and blogs and podcasts and videos and collaborations and getting jobs in the community is just astounding. And this is not something I push for. I merely create a space for it. And to me, that's very, very important. I mean, the whole Interinteract idea was kind of emerged from something I realized about my old startup, where everything was around creating defense tools for online communication in like 2016, 2017. And then at a certain point, I realized that we are past that era of online paranoia, and I can just create quasi-curated open spaces and just allow people to be at their best behavior and knowledge, and then it will happen. And the Interinteract for me has been the vindication of this. But like, there are three layers at which the Interinteract exists for me. One is kind of the no-brainer part for me, where you know, the layer where this is just the manifestation of myself into the world. And I don't necessarily think about it. It's kind of like my taste and my rhythm and my preferences. I grew up in a show business family. So for me, this live event structure, preparation, performance, and then come down. And that arc is very natural for me. So, you know, that's both good and bad, right? Because a founder has their personal preferences and instincts and affinities. And then after a certain point, it may become a bottleneck. And for example, right now I'm hiring for two positions because I need to go beyond, you know, this is my preferences and manifestation of my taste into the world. And then there is a part of it that is very rational for me, where I'm like sitting down and strategizing and trying to understand the market and doing really ruthless user research all the time about everything I do. And the whole Interinteract is built upon the tightest feedback loop imaginable. So I know immediately if what I do is good or not, if it's wanted or not. And I iterate all the time, multiple times a day. And I really enjoy that. Like, I think that's like a founder's dream, to have an immediate feedback loop. And then there is this kind of spiritual layer to the Interinteract where I have no idea how this happened, you know?
Yeah, no, totally.
Like, I'm so happy, but like, yeah. I'm just this little person sitting somewhere in continental Europe under lockdown. And then there is this massive thing blowing up around me in the best possible way. So that's been really, really humbling and overwhelming and beautiful. And I feel so privileged and grateful to be able to work on this.
Yeah.
And now I need to answer your question.
No, it's okay. I'm curious about this now, because I think that was so interesting. I totally have felt those same sort of layers. I think I interpret it maybe a little bit differently, but just to kind of recap that, because I think it was so good, which is there's your personal preferences, which is making sure, am I excited about this, essentially, right? Is this actually something that I think is really cool, or am I forcing it? Am I just doing it because? And that's kind of like the first checkbox. And for me lately, I'm finding if I don't make that almost the highest priority on the list, the other two don't work. So I think there's this
kind of make something you want.
Yeah, you have to start with
your own mask on first, right?
Yeah, right, totally. And it's so easy though to fall into the second camp and over index essentially on that, right? Which this the second kind of layer that you mentioned is the sort of practical, logical, non-biased sort of reality of are people responding well to this? Did that go well? And you're right, the best way to improve is to have that quick iteration. And to be really, it's not about you as a person. And that's the thing that's so hard to separate, right? Like layer one is about you as a person. Am I feeling this? Layer two is like, everyone hated that. It has nothing to do with me. And I think the toughest thing for a creative is to actually be able to live with both of those ideas simultaneously. It's a really tough balance. And, personally, I agree. I think there is I don't want to say existential. I think that's the wrong word, but there's a spiritual, just like, synchronistic, whatever you want to call it, way that things come together that you're like, I also could not have created that with one of the first two layers. It was very unconscious and I'm really stoked about it. I'm really just like amazed. I just feel like that tension specifically with the first two is the part people struggle with, because I think sometimes they confuse, I did this because I wanted to, but people didn't respond well and they think that's about them. Am I making sense of that?
Absolutely. I think for me, understanding that my old startup was looking at kind of like sitting on the horse backwards kind of thing. And for me, that was, it was actually such a relief to understand that I was wrong, because I was really struggling with product market fit with my first startup. And I always thought that it's because I'm not doing it well enough. And I was just like working more and more and more. And I was really suffering. I thought like efficiency means that I just suffer. And then I literally just like turned around on the horse. And I was like, no, actually, this is I'm right about what I'm trying to work on, but it has to be exactly the other way around. And suddenly you're like in the flow of the river, as opposed to like swimming against the tide, right? And that was a really interesting moment for me. And I think maybe, I don't know if this is a controversial statement or not. I know Paul Graham, for example, speaks about this, but I think this is where it comes in handy that I'm older, because I'm in my mid-30s. And so I think I know myself reasonably well by now. And I also understand that we don't have ideas, ideas have us. And so when I changed my mind upon, when I acquired new information, early 2019, I realized I was wrong and I changed my mind basically 180 degrees. That didn't feel like a loss of identity. I wasn't embarrassed. If anything, I was really relieved.
Relieved, yeah. You can drop the...
Yeah. And that was really, like dropping the weight in a way. And I've never felt weighted down by what I'm working on. I have a lot of challenges and there are a lot of problems, obviously. Like, this is a company, I'm super, super, like, still underfunded and overworked, and all of those ramen startup stages are there. But I've never felt that weight. What I feel is like, there's so much demand that I'm just like making more pancakes because people want more pancakes. And it's like, and I like making pancakes. So, I'm sweaty, I'm sweating, but I'm happy. So that's I think I would compare the feeling to. But let me just answer your question about the format and the process. When I stopped working on my old company, the defensive AI chat internet content thing, where I was kind of like using my linguistics background to build that product, I knew that I was going to work on public intellectualism, because this is something that's very important to me. I'm kind of like a rebellious ex-academic in that sense. I really believe in inquiry and knowledge and kind of like sitting under a tree and talking about things. But I really think that academia is not doing a good enough job at that, and particularly not in, like, academia is a little bit like, if you have a good experience at a university, then it will be like your white rabbit your whole life. Right, because they show you like this exciting intellectual life for a couple of years, and then they kick you out. And then you go and you're supposed to be going into a job and what, read blogs in your spare time that's going to satisfy your intellectual needs? No. So I was like, okay, so if we have these, you know, a billion people with a university degree who are craving that kind of healthy intellectual life, the same way as you want to have a healthy physical life and a healthy emotional life and a good professional life, I want to build that for people.
A huge market. And not what people are talking about. Everyone's talking about the, you know, college is broken part. And you're saying, what about the rest of someone's life thereafter?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I just basically, when I realized that I was wrong about the defensiveness and that I can actually open up and people will be welcoming of that, that gave me kind of the confidence to start saying, like, I'm actually going to build a new practice of public intellectualism, and it's not going to be political. There is good public intellectualism and there are innovators in public intellectualism in the US and the UK, but it's always political. You look at it and you know, is it left or right, blah, blah, blah. And for a lot of people, that's really alienating. I think in our community, and our community, I would say, probably has like the highest, you know, density of intellectual capital on the internet today, in the inter-intellect. Like most people identify as outside of current politics, like party politics. And that, so it, should that, you know, mean that the smartest people in, you know, who are currently like aspiring public educators will not be able to engage because there are no platforms that are non-political? And I was like, no, we can actually just like build that. And we do have some topics that touch upon political angles where, you know, we have like extra rules for moderation and stuff like that. And we've had some very heated debates in the inter-intellect about, I don't know, immigration and gender and stuff like that. But it was very constructive. And I left those events feeling like I learned something really valuable just by allowing people to have open discussions. So that was very, very interesting. So in 2019, I was working on this app where I was trying to figure out if I can train people to be more successful public intellectuals, basically using kind of these linguistic algorithms. And on the other end, I started building this very loose-ended community, the II, and I went to San Francisco a couple of times and like Oxford, and we were doing these events. And then slowly but surely, these two things merged into one another, and it became the inter-intellect, where there is some very casual training. It's mostly like self-training inside the community, which is for the hosts and other celebrities in the community. But it's not, you can be in the community without training yourself. If you do really good events and if you're a really valuable contributor into the community. So that's, I think that's been my innovation here. And the crossing of the boundaries that I was exploring in the manifesto article last year, we are a niche we just didn't know, where it's a quote unquote the new IRL. So we're experimenting with new hybrids of online, offline, for the new generation, you know, new generations, plural. There's no distinction between online, offline. Right. There's no offline, you know. So I'm very curious about that. And very closely related to that, this geography agnostic thing, where we're both building strong local hubs. So inside our community, for example, Los Angeles is like, we know who are the inter-intellects in Los Angeles, and then they meet each other, you know, sometimes, but they also come to global salons and then they host and then they travel and then goes to Paris and then meets the inter-intellects there. So it's this both global and local thing is very, very important to me.
Yeah. Was there like to you a moment that sort of felt risky when you switched from, like you sort of made these connections between the, you know, old startup and this new vision, you were hosting these IRL events. Did it feel like a leap and like a risk when you shifted online, like that initial push? Like, I'm just curious how, or if that just felt really like seamless and easy, you know, I'm wondering about like the first salon or whatever, if like it took you weeks to make the landing page and be like, okay, I'm doing this, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was just really natural.
Okay, I'm going to tell you the truth about how this happened, okay? very, very, very unfiltered. Hope I'm not going to hurt anybody's sensitivities here. So on February the 9th this year, I had just come back to Brussels from London. I had just hosted an event in Stripe's HQ in London in Old Street. And I sat down and I started working very hard at the kind of like figuring out the perfect incorporation of the II community and the app I was working on into the Interintellect. Because it was like, I realized that we have 100% overlap in users and the community is growing very, very, you know, strongly. So it, the right thing to do is to incorporate them to one another. And then to kind of like celebrate this realization or ambition, I fell sick with COVID on the 9th of February. Wow. So I was very, very knocked out and in at home in the new city where I had just moved to kind of build in peace. And I was very, very sick and I didn't have a speaking voice for 3 weeks. And I couldn't even take a call. So I was just sitting here at home with like three blankets and a thermometer in my mouth, thinking that I was like, I was just doing worse than ever before. And this was like kind of early in COVID. So I probably caught it in London. So in Brussels, nobody yet really knew about it. There was no testing. You know, the quarantine laws were not in place yet. There were no lockdowns yet. And I was sitting at home and I was just like, so bored. I remember I was like, I need to build this because I'm just like, I need to do something. This cannot go on like this. People need me. I can't be like off the map for a month. And I literally sat down and I was like, okay, let's create at least like a Slack community for the II. I can do that without a speaking voice. I don't even have to get out of bed, right? And so on the 14th of February, I remember because I was laughing that this is Valentine's Day. On the 14th of February, I just created the Slack for the Interintellect and put it on my Twitter. Like, guys, you know, if anybody wants to come, blah, 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 and put out a public link. And like, there was this influx, but this was like way before the lockdowns, right? So it was not because people couldn't go anywhere. It's like people really wanted to be in the Interintellect. And it's just like there was this influx and I had to disable the link, right? Wow. And then in 10 days, we used up the free tier in Slack. So they exchanged basically like 10,000 messages in the Slack. And then I created like a task force inside the community. I got all the engineers together into like a private channel. Like, guys, we have to move these people somewhere. I can't afford having like this amount of volume on Slack. We didn't have enough funding. And so we went, we moved to Mattermost, which is an open source thing. And it's not as flashy as Slack, but it's like a good temporary solution. We're still on Mattermost actually. And we are just nearing 100,000 posts. Wow. By like 300 monthly active users. So they are very active. And that was a really crazy moment because that was a moment where we were kind of 1 month ahead of everybody. So the first salon that had to be moved fully online was 14th of March, the New York City salon that was supposed to be in Chelsea. And I'm like so sad about this, was the first thing that was on Zoom. And I remember that I hosted it, but my voice was still very bad. So it was like, I was just not talking too much. And, you know, I had shortness of breath and all those things. And that was really, really good. And then I was like, oh, we're onto something. We have this format, this works. And I started very slowly scaling it first, one event per week, then two. And now we have like five or six events a week now. And on 27th of August will be the first day when we have two events a day. And my goal is to have like three a day by the end of the year in three different time zones. So we have Asia, Europe, and America, just to kind of like make it easier for our members. But I remember when we did this, so when there was this initial boom in the online community, and I started to kind of construct the structure of the company, where is the community in the whole company, right? Because if we have this pyramid, then you have all the attendees at the bottom of the pyramid. They are the biggest group. And then actually the host community is relatively small. It's like a VIP green room where people come and they train and they get better and they get to know each other. And then they host the events. And it's like an IRL Substack, if you like. So they create the content, which is the events. and make an income and build a following, et cetera, et cetera. And my salons nowadays are just like actually quite rare for me to host a salon. Last week I hosted two and that was relatively rare. So there was this moment where a lot of people found me and they were like, now is the time to do communities because there's this unprecedented event that we don't know how long it's going to last. And you should charge for membership and do this and do that. And I was like, that's not what we're doing. That's not what the Interintact is doing, right? The Interintact has a community, but our product is not the community. Our product, the thing that we make, is this network of events, right? And that's very important when you look at like, what is the purpose and mission of this company? And that is to create a global network of salons, local hubs, and a new practice of public intellectualism, right? As a form of intellectual entertainment, if you like. So I had to kind of like say no to a few people at that point who wanted to kind of use a cookie cutter on the Interintellect. And that's difficult. It's always difficult to be the odd one out and say, guys, I understand what you're doing. I'm doing something different. And just kind of, you know, work hard on being vindicated eventually and really believing in yourself.
Yeah, well, it's just going with the momentum and energy that's there instead of trying to force it into being something that it's not. And I think it's really interesting the way you've sort of built the business model around it, because I do think it's, from my experience, very difficult to monetize purely just like community as a product. But if you have a better kind of format for it, the community is very happy to pay and they're going to connect as a byproduct, but it's not always just like you're saying, like that initial membership thing or whatever just wasn't working for you. And so I think that makes a lot of sense to me. And it sounds like also moving to your own platform was a great idea as well, because then you're capped in what that structure is. And so the shape of your community would have to follow whatever the shape of the tool. And I know that's scary probably early on. It sounds like you had a lot of help from the community to bridge over to your own tool, but now you have full ownership.
It was very interesting. First of all, I love how you framed that. And I think that week on the 27th of February, so 13 days after we opened the online community on Slack, we did the migration. And so first of all, the volume was very surprising and overwhelming to me. And I was like, oh my God, okay, people really want this. You know, and a lot of people started tweeting about the Interintellect, and a lot of people started putting Interintellect member into Twitter bios and LinkedIn's. And, you know, wow. I understood immediately my responsibility and how important giving people a good intellectual life is. Contrary to whatever anybody's saying, there is proof that this is very important to people, right? So the volume was the first kind of moment when I was like, oh my God, okay, so like let's, I remember I immediately like got better, my health just got better because I was like, let's get down to work, you know? And it was marvelous. But the other thing that was really, you know, these are those things that you read about and you never think they will happen to you. So we migrated people off Slack in 24 hours, like 70% of our daily active users moved, even though they had to basically get to know a new platform, which was Mattermost, and download a new app on their phone that they didn't have. And that was worse than Slack. And I was like, okay. I was thinking like, one day I will put this into my deck.
Yeah, you know, seriously.
It's one of those things where you're like, oh my God, okay, this is really huge and people really want to do this. And that's just fantastic. And the same thing happened with hosting, because I knew that probably most people who come to salons a lot and pay for the salons and, you know, they want to host. And so I was like, do you guys want to host? And they were like, yeah. So I was like, okay, that's our business model then. This is it.
Yeah.
So it's like, just ask people.
Right. And friction doesn't matter if you have a product that people really want. And all those details that you think matter so much when you're designing the product, you want it to be perfect. And it's like, that's not the thing. And so people are happy to move over I definitely can understand that, because at the time you think, oh my God, this is going to be such a big migration, or like, I'm really like am I going to hurt this thing? Like, am I going to, in the migration, am I going to kill the magic? But I think that's just awesome that the community showed you like, no, that's not what this is about.
Yeah. I mean, I still know what are the things that are not working and what I have to improve and what I have to build. I mean, that's why I'm fundraising now. I have to build out a couple of things because I want to lower the friction. Yeah. But it's a really good way of seeing who are your core members who will come no matter what. And so actually to come to an InternTech salon is not very easy. First of all our events on Eventbrite are private. So you can only find the link if you go on our Twitter or you go on our website or you are in our community forum. You can't, you know, you don't get an email about it. You can't search on Eventbrite. And this is a reason, right? Because I'm going to build a place where you will be able to search for InternTech events, right? And this is a really good, the same thing like getting into the community. Like, being in the host community is free in the sense that you host InternTech events and we take a small cut from your revenue, right? That's your giving back to the community. But it's not that easy to get into the community. We have a very long waiting list that takes ages. I mean, it does take ages, I know, because there are so many people on it. And the forum itself has its own rhythm. So I kind of feel when it's the moment when new people can be added from the waiting list. We have a referral system with which you can skip the waiting list. So you have to know an InternTech and be referred, and then you will be accepted. So it's like that. But you have to, like, I constantly see on Twitter people basically like begging other InternTech to refer them. And the best way to get referred is obviously to come to our events and make friends, right? After the most successful events, I often get, so one of the things that happens after like a 4-hour salon is that the moment I close the call, I get an influx of bookings from the members. So it's really overwhelming because you just like had to kick out people of a Zoom call after 4 hours. So they go and eat and go to the toilet and then they just like book for another 5 salons. And I keep thinking like, what if I did like a 24-hour salon, would there still be people? And then people, you know, bring in, you know, like people bring their spouses now and their siblings and their children, or they eat on the call. So it's really like part of life to live on the InternTech. So, you know, I really try to create a system that is in some weird kind of fractal structure is about self-selection. Do you want to be an InternTech? Do you want to come to a salon? Then you will find it. And we want to have people who want to come to InternTech salons. We don't want to get people who just like happened upon it, right? You want to be in a forum, then you have to use a new platform. It's not just because you're on Slack and everybody else is already on Slack. I want to talk to people who are intentionally in the InternTech. You know, do you want to come to into the community? You can figure out how to do that. And it's just a good kind of entrance exam because you will host salons and that requires some kind of organizational skills. So one of the first easiest ways to check if you have that is, have you figured out how to make it into the community? And this is not like, you know, when some big VC says like, oh, people have to figure out how to network in Silicon Valley. And I'm like, you know that 99.9999% of humanity doesn't have the resources to figure that out. So I'm trying to like not be that kind of gatekeeper, just like have like a minimal bureaucracy at the start that everybody can figure out who wants to. And then create a system of meritocracy inside the InternTech where it's really about how, you know, smart and engaging you are with all the information available to you on the internet for free and the tools of production, you know, available to you on the internet for free. And how hard you work on becoming a successful InternTech. Nobody's going to look at whether you're American, a white 60-year-old male living in New Hampshire in a college town. Nobody's going to look at whether you went to Sorbonne or Yale. Nobody's going to look at how many countries you traveled to. Have you ever left your small town in India, for example? Because this should be a non-issue in the 21st century when we live on the internet. And it's killing me that in some circles this still matters. And I'm very proud that I've built a place on the internet where it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Right.
Nobody cares who's your dad in the InternTech.
Yeah, there's a quote, I think, from Virgil Abloh, where he talks about the tourists and the purists. I don't know if you've heard him talk about that before, but the purists, it's just an energy and like a vibe and a passion for whatever it is. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your role is. It doesn't matter what your age is. It doesn't matter what your location is. Do you have that pure self-motivated interest to be a part of something? And if you do, then welcome to the table, because we're all geeks together, you know, on this topic. So, but the tourists, they like to, you know, they want it to be too easy to get in. They want to like just check it out and pass by. And I think that's a perfect kind of encapsulation of what you're working on, is what you just described, and also how that scales up, because it's all intrinsically motivated. But I want to be respectful of your time here. I feel like we need to maybe do a round two at some point. There's so many things that were just great little snippets that I really resonate with. And yeah, it's been so amazing to see this blow up. I can't wait to see how that continues. And, you know, do you just want to share some links for where people can find you and, you know,
sure,
your Twitter and everything like that? I'll link everything up, but I think what I want to do is say the same way you do it with your salons. We'll have another conversation sometime in the future where we'll continue. So everybody stay tuned for that. I'm practicing for my salon, host role or whatever. So yeah.
I know we're just starting to scale to do more, events in, Pacific time. Cool. So I know that it can be a little bit challenging for people in SF or LA, or Seattle. And sometimes they have to come to my salons at like 8 a.m. their time. And that's not the best time to have a glass of wine, probably, unless you've been up all night, because then you can.
Right. So yeah, where should people find you? You know, what's the best way to get involved, all that?
Yeah. So interintellect.com is our website, where we have our events that you can just book for anytime. You can also find our videos there. So if you click on videos, you will be taken to our YouTube channel, where you can see a lot of really exciting conversations that we did. We don't record salons. Salons are safe places in that sense. But we do have fireside chats and talks events, that are open to the public, in the sense that you can find a recording of them. And you can also find our community waiting list on the website, interintellect.com. But again, the best and fastest way to make it into the host hub, if this is what you want to do, is to attend a couple of salons, make friends with the Interintellect, and get a referral.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. And looking forward to our next conversation.
Thank you very much.
That is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, if I can be of any help, feel free to reach out. My email is David, D-A-V-I-D, at deathtostock.com, deathtostock.com. You can also find my personal site at davidsherry.me. Would love to chat with you. If you found this valuable, please review, subscribe. That means a ton to me, and it just gives me the good vibe to keep going. So I'd really appreciate that as well. And that's it. We'll be back again soon.